This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, organizers of Learn to Homebrew Day. This November 2nd, thousands of people will gather at Learn to Homebrew Day sites worldwide to brew beer and learn about the hobby of homebrewing. To find a celebration near you or host your own gathering, visit homebrewersassociation.org and click Events. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 17th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we visit with Grant Chandler, quality manager of Lost 40 Brewing in Little Rock. At long last, I made it to the capital city to check in on the brewing scene there, and we start with the largest production brewery in the state. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. The next video episode that's coming up will be our Halloween episode. This year, I decided not to brew a beer with wacky ingredients. We didn't even wear costumes on the show. I know, bah humbug, but I just wanted to brew something that would be delicious heading into cooler weather. And that turned out to be a bourbon stout using the bourbon that Aaron Mayer sent me from Pine Bluffs Distilling in Wyoming. And I think it turned out pretty darn good, if I do say so myself. This week, I'm planning to brew another big dark beer, a big dark Belgian-inspired beer. I haven't brewed one of those in a while. I used to brew a lot of what I called Belgian brunettes that were big and tasty. So I'm looking forward to having a keg of this as the weather cools off. I'm also excited about a cider that I made with the latest seasonal from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. The current seasonal release from Imperial is A40 Bubbles. This is Imperial's first cider strain, as well as their first foray into gluten-free production. They say it's a traditional cider strain. Bubbles is a beautiful strain for fruit juice-based fermentations. The clean profile of the yeast, especially when used at the lower end of the temperature range, allows the nuances of the fruit to be prominent in the finished bubbly beverage. The strain is produced on Imperial's 100% gluten-free media. I pitched Bubbles into a couple of gallons of organic apple juice. And since Imperial yeast is organic, I guess this will be my first organic cider. And boy, I tell you, the smell coming out of the airlock was great. Just smelled fresh and appley. And so now I'm deciding whether I want to prime it and carbonate it in the bottle or maybe flavor it in any way. So I haven't done many ciders in my time, but it's super easy to do. And it smells great. Hey, get with your homebrew store and ask for A40 Bubbles for my friends at Imperial Organic Yeast. Let's take a look into the mailbag. This comes from Chris, who's an American on the island of Gotland, Sweden. Chris says, at the end of the West African sorghum beer episode with Ryan Deaver, you discuss recipe formulation. That triggered my memory, and I got out my copy of Wild Fermentation by Sandor Katz. Chris says, sure enough, there was a recipe called African sorghum beer. Basically, you make a lacto-fermented sour mash, which is later added to the boil. Then the whole thing is left to ferment naturally using only the bacteria present on the grain. The alternative of adding regular yeast is given as well. Chris says, I hope that this may be of some service. A final note, I encourage all homebrewers to read Wild Fermentation. It's fantastic inspiration for anyone looking to delve deeper into fermenting anything from sauerkraut to water kefir sodas. Chris says, I can't recommend it enough. Very cool. Thanks, Chris. I forwarded the note to Ryan Deaver. Who knows? Maybe Ryan will be using that recipe, at least for inspiration, in his attempt at making chukutu from Benin. It is finally getting cooler here in Northwest Arkansas, and I'm super happy about that. And I'm assuming that it's getting cooler elsewhere, too, in the Northern Hemisphere. And that means brewing season. You might want to brew up a tasty pumpkin ale. Despite the detractors on Twitter who don't like pumpkin ales, you can make a delicious one. And our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa, have the Ichabod Pumpkin Ale ingredient kit available at highgravitybrew.com. It's right there on the front page. It's one of many kits of different styles available at highgravitybrew.com. This beer is inspired by Tulsa Brewing Company's Old Pumpkinhead. That brew pub is no longer around, but people still hanker for that beer. And you can find that kit at highgravitybrew.com, along with electric brewing controllers and systems that will bring you from the propane past into the future of electricity. I myself have a Warthog brew-in-a-bag system, and I love it. But High Gravity also has more traditional configurations, from 5 gallons to 2 barrels, along with their own Warthog systems. You can find other manufacturers of electric gear on highgravitybrew.com. Take the pain out of propane and treat yourself this brewing season to an electric setup. And do it from the experts who've been making electric systems for more than a decade. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. That's at family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. Okay, a couple of years ago, Grant Chandler of Lost 40 brought up some amazing beers to share with Steve and me. And finally, I got a chance to visit Grant at the brewery in Little Rock. Grant Chandler, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Pleasure, James. Thanks for having me.
Can you believe it's been 2 years since we sat in the, or stood in the back of Steve's brew shop and tasted wonderful beers?
No. When I was getting ready for this episode, I could have sworn it was just last year. So it's, and time does fly.
We had a great time, and you had driven up to see us specifically, and so I thought, I'm on the way with a friend to Hot Springs to visit another friend, and so I said, finally, I'm going to get the opportunity to visit, you know, a Little Rock brewery. I've been saying forever that, you know, I need to get down there. There's all kinds of great stuff happening, and so finally, I'm in the capital city. Not too far from where I used to live. I used to live on 10th and Cumberland, oh, cool. Just across the highway there. So it's kind of almost in my old neighborhood.
I imagine the brewing scene was a bit different back then.
I don't even know if Fino's was brewing beer back then.
Oh, wow, that's a long time. It opened in 93 or so.
Yeah, it was 92 when I left.
Ah, okay.
So I was working at Channel 11 next door, and they were making pizzas, right. But they weren't making beer yet, so... It's been a while.
It has. It sounds like when you left, there were zero breweries here.
Well, yeah, because Diamond Bear was even after I left. So, yeah. So everything's happened since I lived here. So what's been happening in the 2 years since we talked?
You know, Rotation Nation, man. Just trying to make more brands... keep our customers satisfied with variety while also really, you know, continuing to dial in on brand consistency. I think a lot of breweries, you know, they either choose one of two main paths, and that one is variety, and you know, brew pubs excel in that kind of model, and then others are consistency, where you see like national breweries and other microbreweries who still are, you know, enslaved to the need for variety in today's beer market. But we like to think, you know, we try our utmost to do both. It stretches us thin from time to time. But, you know, we think that because we're not a huge brewery, but we're also not a small brewery. And that, you know, kind of puts us in a... maybe a Goldilocks situation where we can offer a considerable amount of variety while also, making the same brands enough time that we can really dial recipes in and not just making everything once and then moving on to the next thing.
And you're quality manager now, so that's a big,
Yeah, that's a good point.
you say you're not a huge brewery, but you're the biggest in the state as far as volume.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, all things are relative, I suppose. Arkansas is not the biggest beer drinking state, so we're the biggest in Arkansas, but compared to any other state, we would be average at most, probably compared to micro or regional sized breweries or other states. We make a good amount of volume. Well, we hope to do 2020. Trying to get my year straight. What year is it? Anything in 2020, we have to do 18,000 barrels. So it's no small amount at all. But it's when I think of breweries, like New Glarus, they're a real model of ours because they only distribute in their state of Wisconsin, but they do like 220,000 barrels or something ridiculous. Rheingeist is also a big model. They started in the same year as us, and they've grown to, I think, 70 or so thousand barrels in the same amount of time that we've grown to 15. So, those are our perspectives. Anyways, yeah, but it did not occur to me the last time we spoke with each other. I think right at that time was when we were building our quality control lab. And then the summer after that is when we built our yeast propagation lab. So we actually grow all of our yeast in-house, which very few breweries do, our size or larger or smaller. That's something we're really proud of, and definitely helps with our consistency. Having yeast, fresh yeast on demand, it makes a world of difference when you're trying to brew very good, consistent beer. So those are two big things that have happened since we spoke last with each other. The last meeting we had was definitely focused around our Wild Veal program, which has grown, but we're not really doing anything particularly new. It's still experimenting. So, each beer is new, but the concept isn't per se. And then we have a few new varieties of beer.
So we've got some beers in front of us here. Should we start sampling while we're
Yeah,
talking? Wait,
yeah.
where should we
Lay it
start?
out first. So I have three of our kind of staple beers here. One is our Love Honey Bock. This could be considered our flagship. It's definitely our best seller. We have our Rock Hound IPA, which is our has been our fastest growing for t 3 years now. Definitely more than two. And then we have our seasonal, which is our Hunter Oktoberfest. But we also have a couple of bottle conditioned beers. One is a wild beer from our cellar. It's kind of like our wild flagship beer, if you will. It's a Twig, which is a mixed culture table beer that's fermented and aged in our fooder, 30 barrel oak fooder. And another is a classic saison that is brewed with a wild yeast isolate that I cultured out of Dunbar Garden here in Little Rock. I wouldn't call this a wild beer anymore because it's pure culture and it's a yeast that I've banked and domesticated. But it did come from the wild at one time. But it's just a quintessential classic saison. It's not mixed culture or sour or anything like that.
And you're sporting your Milk the Funk t-shirt.
Oh,
So you're
thanks for noticing. Yeah.
So it gives you a little credibility there.
Hey.
So where should we start? Should we
Yeah, let's
start
start with the
with
Bock,
the Bock?
probably. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I really like this beer.
Yeah, I've been in the course of starting, building, establishing the Wild Barrel cellar here at Los Forty, I've been consumed with a lot of wild beer, conceptually, pragmatically, and then of course consuming what I'm making to make sure that it's what I'm trying to make and to inform what I'm trying to make later. But things come full circle, and I find myself drinking a lot of our lagers these days. There's something to be said about drinkability, clean and consistent. And lagers are really like where breweries, I think, can really illustrate how consistent they can be as a brewery. It's one thing to make really bold, flavorful things like mixed culture fruited beers with limes and peppers, or just exaggerated stuff, which are great. But if you really like, there's something to be said for a brand that you can go to consistently and always know it's going to taste the same and great.
Yeah, this is very drinkable beer. It's nice and malty, but there's enough bitterness in the backbone to support it. It's Bocky. I don't know. There's a
Yeah, sure.
how do you describe that that malt character, that there's a caramel character that is has a sweet sweet characteristic, but it's not super sweet in
Yeah,
this
the
presence.
finish is actually quite dry for as much malt character as there is, and it's not the most docile Bock, in all honesty. I think it's easy. It's an easier to drink Bock than the true style of Bock is. It's got a lot of caramel and chocolate and yeah, like just really kind of malty. For the brewers out there, a lot of Munich and Vienna toasty notes. But with a with good lagering, this beer develops, I think, like a kind of like a raspberry note somehow. That definitely evokes with time. There's nothing in the recipe that would suggest that would be the case, but there's definitely like a berry flavor that I get out of this beer that I think is very cool.
And is there honey in it?
Good question. Yes, probably an obvious question. Yes, there is. Yeah. We put so we brew 30 barrels at a time here, and we put 120 pounds of honey in every batch of Arkansan honey from Fisher in North Little Rock.
So what does that do to the fermentability and the style? I mean,
Yeah,
how does that
exactly.
balance?
So, you're a good leading interview, James. Earlier I said it's a little more drinkable, it's a little drier, and it's totally because of the honey. The honey just kind of dries it out and makes it a little less heavy on the back end.
But it's nice. It's not sweet. That
You might.
you might expect it with a name, Love
Sure.
Honey. But it's nice. It's nice and drinkable, and the honey character brings a sweet impression without being sweet.
Right, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The perceptive sweetness instead of saccharine sweetness. Yeah, if you pay attention and smell with your mind's nose, you might can pick up some honey character there. I think a lot of it probably gets blown off in fermentation, but if you look for it, there's a faint honey note.
And what's the hop schedule like on that?
Oh, it's all Mount Hood. And it is it's pretty traditional. We do 60-minute addition, 30-minute addition, 10-minute addition. Nothing crazy.
Well, very nice. I'm still thirsty. I have a designated driver today, so I and
Didn't think to
I
ask.
had water for lunch out there, and I had a nice, very nice smoky chicken salad, and I had water, and got to catch up with my friend Christy that I hadn't seen since college. That's a long time. Maybe older than the no. I was going to say maybe a longer time than the average age of our listenership,
Sure.
but we probably got an older listenership. But
Sometimes I
anyway.
forget that we sell food here at all.
It was good,
Good to hear.
but I had what my point was that I had water, so I was saving myself for this interview. So what do we got here?
This is the Hunter Oktoberfest. It's our seasonal, like every brewer in the world. It's October, so.
And this is a go-to beer for me. I look forward to fall. One reason is the temperatures. Maybe one day we'll have cooler temperatures, but the heat's hanging on. But also, this is one of my favorite Oktoberfests.
Right on.
It is super drinkable in the same way that the Bock is drinkable. It's got that Oktoberfest, that Märzen character, but again, it's not super sweet.
Right.
It's all about the
It's all about drinkability.
yeah, the caramely character of the grain, the malt. It just is very clean
and
just
beer,
wonderful.
Good Oktoberfest, good Märzens, in general, I think should have this trait. But that's something that we like about this beer and that we strive to do is get a good herbal spiciness to it from the hops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my favorite. While the Bock, you know, accentuates malt character, I think this one, while they're very similar beers, this one is a little more hoppy. And I think it makes it a little bit more to drink a liter or two of. I mean, it's more refreshing, more balanced.
So dissect this beer. I mean, if you're looking to you know, build a delicious Oktoberfest at home, what are the key points? What should people be putting in their recipe?
So definitely good amounts of Munich and Vienna, mostly Vienna, really. You don't maybe just a hint of Kira Munich for color. You really don't want a lot of caramel flavor. Sort of like what we were saying about Bock, it's more kind of like about the perception rather than the actual flavor. When you look at a good Oktoberfest and it has that kind of copper gold color that looks like caramel, or, you know, you're inclined to think it tastes that way. But it's mostly just Pilsner and Vienna with just a touch of Kira Munich.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then we actually hop our Oktoberfest with a blend of Mount Hood and Crystal.
Hmm.
So not traditional, really, but...
And more towards the end? Is there more hopping towards the end than the of the boil?
Or yeah, more than the Bock, at least, yeah. But we still spread it out. You know, it still has an early edition, a middle edition, and a late edition.
And how does what's your lagering technique and schedule, and can you detect a difference, you know, in tasting? Do you do tastings of the beer as it goes along through the process to see how it evolves?
Well, with these beers at this point, we've got them pretty dialed in, so we know what to expect. We do quality checks on everything, of course. So we brew the wort, and we pitch Augustiner yeast. That's our house lager yeast. We ferment at 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and then we bump it up for a diacetyl rest. At about 7 days or so. Let it go for another week, maybe a little more, maybe like 8 days. And then crash it to 40, where we let it sit for 3 weeks. And then we go down to 32 for another 2 weeks, and then package it.
So it sounds pretty traditional.
Yeah, the fermentation and the lagering is very traditional. The recipe is a little more modern, I suppose. We have a single infusion brew house. Can't do decoctions or can't even do step mashes. So it's, you know, we definitely have play with our malts to sort of emulate traditional Bavarian brewing, but the fermentation is definitely rather traditional, I would say.
And I guess, you know, being of your size, I guess you've got to plan your production schedule around the lagering so that you don't get kind of bottlenecks in fermenters and such.
Yeah, we have a couple 240-barrel tanks that are dedicated to lagers so that we can make... because, you know, with our other tanks, our 90-barrel tanks, we can flip ales very quickly with them, but with the 240s we can make a decent amount of lager without having to take up, you know, like four other 90s. We can just do one tank and let it sit for a good while.
It was very nice. It seems like we're speeding through these beers, but I did smell this one in the snifter here, and the aroma on this one, the hop aroma on this beer is very nice. It's without Steve here, I'm trying to, you know, I need to come up with the descriptors myself, but I want to say piney, on the nose. There's almost kind of a cedar character. It smells delicious. I haven't tasted it yet, but I do. If it's the one I'm thinking of, I do purchase it. But this smells really good and fresh.
Yeah, it's a great IPA. It's not. We make quite a few hazy IPAs, you know, as are every brewery in the United States. But
just a fad, Grant.
It might be. They've been among my favorite beers for a while now. But in all honesty, I find myself drinking more and more of beers like this, which are, I wouldn't say this is a classic West Coast IPA, but it's more in that direction. It's definitely a more traditional American IPA. It's not hazy, but it's definitely significantly more bitter than hazy IPAs are. It's definitely less aggressive, less rich and fruity in a hoppy way. It's more, first of all, it's not nearly as highly hopped in the dry hop. It's more bitter, but a little less aroma, and a cleaner, crisper, drier body. And it's a different beer, really. I mean, the only thing that ties this and other IPAs together is that they're hoppy, but it's a beer that's a lot more clean and drinkable and consistent. A big part of my trouble with kind of like these new IPA varieties is that they're way not stable. And that goes into what I've been saying about consistency. Consistency in beer, I think, is very important, and it's very important for breweries that are, you know, aspire to be regional breweries. It's a lot easier to turn around unstable beers if you're only making 7 barrels at a time and selling it all in your tap room. The beer doesn't have time to stale or spoil. But beers like this, they have staying power. They're very good and clean and stable, and you can accordingly enjoy them now, or you can enjoy them in 6 weeks, and hopefully they're not too different.
Yeah, this is it's very clean and drinkable, and yeah, you're right. I mean, especially in a state like Arkansas, where you know, the liquor store that's just down the street from my house in Prairie Grove, you know, a six pack of good IPA may be in the cooler for a few weeks. Meanwhile, the Natty Light flies off the shelf. Yeah, that works. But yeah, talk about this beer and say the name of it again, and then talk about the recipe and how you get such clean, crisp hop character. And there is a teeny bit of, you know, or not a teeny bit, but there is a component of juiciness in there. There are some citrus.
It's juicy by IPA standards, you know, 3 years ago. It's mostly Pilsner with a tiny bit of Vienna and a tiny bit of flaked barley. And then the hopping is classic C varietals, Centennial, Crystal, and Cascade. It is, you know, I think IBUs are kind of a meaningless metric, but this is probably hopped to around 60 IBUs ballpark. And, you know, it's dry hopped at about a pound per barrel, as opposed to a lot of IPAs these days that are hopped, you know, 3, 4, 5 pounds per barrel. I think the juiciness largely just comes from the body, which is not, you know, significant. It's not full of body like a New England IPA is, but there's some depth there, I think, coming from the flaked barley. And then just the really, like, classic IPA aroma, but fresh. Mm-hmm. You know, the classic IPA aroma when it's not fresh is pretty distinct. I think it's pretty identifiable for any craft beer fan. It's just so bland and bitter. But when you get good Cascade or good Centennial or good Crystal Fresh, it can just be it can have a lot of depth. Mm-hmm. And I think people forget that. I think a lot of brewers kind of forget the value of all things classic beer these days. You know, lagers are, you know, or classic C varietal hops. Like the beer market today is all about trends and fads, and we're part of that. You know, that we can't denigrate what consumers want, but as a person outside of beer and within beer, I really treasure things that, you know, stand the test of time. And there's a reason, you know, people like, there's a reason lager and classic C hops, among other things, are, you know, still here today after being used for years and years and decades and centuries even. Yeah, and so I have an increasing, I found myself, you know, appreciating things of yesteryear, you might say.
And tell me the name of it again. I can't.
Sorry, Rockhound.
Rockhound,
yeah,
that's right. I
Rockhound
could,
IPA.
My capacity for names and faces.
It's absurd. I mean, when you walk into a tap room such as ours and you just see 16 beer names on the wall, I mean.
I mean, I know what the package looks like. You know, I know what the cans look like. You know, when I reach for them, but.
I mean, we for example, you know, we make a point of having Fresh Cut Mondays, where we release a new beer every Monday. It's 52 new beers a year. It's I
Wow.
mean, it's definitely it's a fun challenge as a
And
brewer, but as a consumer, it's
how big are those batches?
They range from one keg, 15, a half barrel, to 240 barrels. I mean, it's everything in between.
And what's the wildest thing? What's the craziest thing that y'all have brewed that you didn't weren't sure of, but it actually worked?
I mean, even that question is so hard because we've been doing this for 5 years, and 5 times 52, like I can't tell you all the, I mean, but I'll, I mean, well, okay, I do have a good answer. We have a beer coming out this winter. It's going to be our winter seasonal. It's called S'morst Queen. Our winter seasons in the past have been a beer called Forest Queen, and that's been our milk stout. But one of our brewers, Jerry, had an idea to take Forest Queen and make it into, you know, what's kind of being dubbed pastry stout in today's beer culture. And so he took Forest Queen and added chocolate and marshmallow and graham cracker to it to, you know, emulate kind of a s'more flavor. And it turned out freaking fantastic. You know, again, I like simple traditional beer. So, you know, I didn't, you know, do your thing, Jerry. You know, make a fresh cut for us. We need one next week and one after that. So, you know, we're always trying to come up with ideas. But it was very good. And so now we've, you know, we're gonna release that to distribution this winter. The cans are actually just out of sight from where we are, but yeah, we got a whole truckload of cans from like a half barrel experimental batch.
Wow, you never know.
Yeah,
it's kind of, so you've got the best of both worlds. You've got a, you know, this large production brewery, but you're still home brewing. Y'all are still
yeah. And to be honest, as brewers, we complain and moan about Fresh Cut Monday a lot because every week it's, you know, we gotta come up with something new.
Yeah.
And
as the producer of a weekly podcast,
yeah,
I get identified.
Kindred spirits. You know, when we're just trying to keep up with growth and production and consistency, which to me remain as quality manager the most important things, despite the fact that, you know, I manage the Wild Beer Cellar, which is dedicated to experimentation with fermentation. I still think, you know, what's most important is our bread and butter was tried and true, and coming up with just something new every week can be rather frustrating because sometimes it seems distracting and unnecessary. But in the long run, it really keeps us growing as brewers and learning new things, as well as, you know, keeping the consumer interested. But as far as I'm concerned, that's of secondary importance. The consumer can find, there's so much variety in beer these days. You know, Lost 40 doing Fresh Cut Monday isn't going to change just the absurd amount of brands available.
to consumers. But what it really does is it keeps us on our toes, and it keeps us growing and experimenting with new flavors. And if we didn't do Fresh Cut Monday, we just wouldn't be as good of a brewery, hands down.
Well, there you go. You mentioned the barrel program, and I'm looking at two big, beautiful bottles over here. Yeah. So is it time to crack open one of those?
Absolutely. I'm trying to think. I'll probably start with the Saison first.
Okay.
This is a Saison Victoria, named after my wife, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and this is the beer that is brewed with a wild Saccharomyces yeast from a local garden. And this is a yeast that I cultured back in 2014, and I've just been banked ever since. And it's a great Saison yeast, and you know, I just found it in a yard.
That's awesome. I remember just a few years ago, you know, they were the word was that you could only do lambics in Belgium,
sure.
You know, because of the is it flora or fauna? I guess
flora.
It may be the flora over there. And it was impossible to do, lambics
sure.
Anywhere else. But then people started doing it.
Yeah, I think it's mostly, if not entirely, debunked at this point.
Oh, yeah, well, I would say.
Yeah.
you're finding great yeast in your yard.
Yeah. And wild yeast is everywhere.
Yeah, and I've had...
To be clear, most of it's bad. I've cultured lots of wild yeast, and for every one good one I find, I have to go through a dozen that are of no good. But if you put all of them into a beer together and give it time, chances are the good stuff will come around.
Oh my goodness, I'm just smelling this beer, and it's perfume in a glass. Oh my gosh,
very floral.
Pardon me while my eyes roll completely back in the back of my head. Man, that smells great. So, and it's got a wonderful head on it, which we're kind of waiting on to die down. But talk about the bones of this beer.
This beer is, it's really just trying to be as traditional as possible. It's just Pilsner and malted white wheat. That's all of the grain, hopped with. Saws and Styrian Goldings at I think it was 60 minutes, 30 minutes, 10 minutes and flame out, and fermented with the Dunbar yeast. That's it. That's the whole recipe.
So how much of that floral, and I tasted it, and it tastes as floral as it smells.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite rose water, you know, but it's along those, it's a tasteful version of what my grandmother's bathroom smelled like, you know. it's the floral, all I can say is floral. It's just beautiful.
And it's a bit spicy.
Floral, yeah. Spicy, but how much is that as the yeast and how much is that as hops?
So I think that question describes the coolest thing about good Saison that you don't pick up in any other beer style, and that is, where does the yeast begin and where do the hops end, or something like that, maybe vice versa depending on your perspective. That is to say, in a good Saison, it's hard to distinguish the two. They definitely, like Saws and Styrian Goldings, definitely have spicy, fruity, floral characteristics in the same way that Dunbar yeast or other Saison yeast do. Spicy, fruity, floral could also be used to describe the culture. And so, you know, you could ferment unhopped wort with Dunbar yeast, and you could hop, you know, like a lager with Saws and Styrian Goldings, and trying them side by side, you could surely you distinguish them, but put together it becomes quite difficult. That is all to say, I made this beer, and I don't know if I can answer your question. they definitely blend very well together. The yeast, I think, gives off more of like an allspice and citrus flavor, while the hops are more definitely floral, but spicy in like an herbal way instead of a pepper way or an allspice way. So, you know, do your best to parse the flavors with that information. But that's kind of the whole point of good saison, I think, is it's a matching of a blending of hop and yeast flavors that really, you know, you think of IPAs, all about hops, not much yeast character. You think about lagers, it's all about balance. No, nothing really shines. You know, it's balance, but nothing. You can clearly taste your malt. Yeast is restrained. Balancing bitterness is there. And then, you know, porters and stouts, it's very malty. Again, not very yeast forward, and just enough bitterness to balance the malt flavors. And you can run through, I think, any style in a similar way where the ingredients can easily be parsed. But I think in a saison, it's a little more difficult.
And the beer, it almost evaporates in your mouth. It's just so light. Dry.
Yeah.
But it's just so and drinkable is not a good adjective either, because sure. Drinkable, you know, the Bock and the Oktoberfest, those are drinkable beers, because part of drinkability, in my opinion, is quenching of thirst.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it does a job. This does not quench your thirst, because it disappears.
Sure. Anything, it leaves you more thirsty.
Yeah,
sort of.
You want more immediately, because it's like, oh, where'd that go?
Yeah. And I might be getting ahead of myself, but that applies even more to Twig, which is what we'll try next. Mm. And I guess we'll talk about that in a second. But this is much more of a... It's different. I don't know how to fill in that blank.
Ethereal. It's
ethereal. It actually says that on the bottle. I don't know if you were reading that.
No, I can't read that far away.
Yeah. Ethereal, dry, effervescent.
Oh, well, there you go. It's proof. The proof of the pudding is in the tasting, as they say.
Yeah.
Wow. That's super good.
I'd like to make this beer. This is the first batch we made, and I'd like to make it again and make it a little more bitter and a little hoppier. But otherwise, it is exactly what I was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be fun to try, but
sure.
It's really, really good the way it is. It's really, really good. So how do you handle the fermentation of this of your backyard yeast or whatever? I mean, do you have to handle it any differently from, you know, any other commercial strain that you propagate
we propagate it in the same way, and definitely try to underpitch it compared. It's very aggressive yeast, you know. I don't know if it has to do with it being wild or something, but it's hungry. It's a hungry yeast. And you know, a little bit can ferment a lot, and it'll ferment very dry, which is necessary for a good saison, I think. But we underpitch, don't control the temperature, so we'll knock out upper 60s, and then let the yeast decide what it's going to ferment at. We don't turn any jackets on, just let it free rise. But we do give it a little more time than our other ales to kind of round out or, you know, clean up. It never really throws like weird flavors in the beginning, but it definitely refines itself in a way that like American ale strains won't. If that makes any sense.
There is a teeny tiny bit of character. As this beer warms, that I'm going to describe as kind of a, and this is not a bad descriptor, but just a teeny tiny bit of a, and I've tasted it in other saisons, a kind of a yogurty in my and that it, but it's slightly tart, maybe. It's just a little, I can't describe it, but when I taste it, that flavor component makes me think of good yogurt. And maybe it is a little bit tart. I don't know.
The power of suggestion is everything. I don't get really any tartness, but if I imagine some like a yogurt flavor, I might not disagree.
Mm.
But I have no idea where that's coming from.
But that's the sign of a good saison. You know, whereas, you know, all these beers that we started with, you can drink a can of it and go, oh, that's a great beer, you know, because you don't have to think about it. Yeah, you don't have to think about it. It's really, you enjoy it and it tastes great, but you don't ponder. You don't ponder an Oktoberfest.
Sure. Yeah, no. It's all about volume.
Yeah, this saison, you could sit and think about and talk about.
Sure.
You know, in the way that some people talk about, you know, a good bourbon or a good cigar or something like that, cheese, you know, anything that has the depth of character that those foods have.
Sure.
Okay, we got one last beer.
That yogurt thing's gonna trip me up.
No, about
that all the time.
I don't want
to. No, it's good. No, like I've just never thought about that flavor before, and I think you're totally right.
But you know what I'm talking about. It's not. It doesn't taste like milk, but it just pushes that button in my brain.
Yeah, I don't know what that button is, but I'll have to think about it some more.
It's like one time I was tasting something and somebody said circus peanuts, and I was like, oh my god, that's exactly what it is. Oh, and here we...
So this could be considered the wild variant of what we just had. Mm. The primary yeast in this beer is also the Dunbar yeast, but it also has a mixed culture that I got from a fig in my backyard added to it. So I took this pure culture that I isolated from the wild, I took this mixed culture that I isolated from the wild, put them together in our oak fooder with a very similar recipe base. A little different, but still very saisonish. But it's lighter. This is only 3.9%, whereas the Saison Victoria was 6.3.
And this is Twig.
Twig, yes.
And we are in the back of a working brewery, so you know the forklift makes its appearance every now and then, which is okay. We you know. All right. Cheers. By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. This definitely smells more wild. Smells. There's almost a Brett character to it.
Yeah, plenty of Brett character. Just plenty of acid. It's going to be a little tart. Some oak.
Yeah, the traditional, you know, horse blanket barnyard kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's darker on the aroma than this than the previous one. The previous one was all, you know... perfume and you know, ethereal, and this one is definitely darker and wilder smelling.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, older. You know, this beer is aged for quite a while in oak, so it's got like a it's got that age flavor on it, where Saison Victoria is very fresh. It definitely has some, you know, depending on who you talk to, aged beer will be worse or better. It definitely changes though.
Wow, that's different. It's still
all in the front. You
know? Exactly. That's a good descriptor. It's all in the front, and then when you swallow, it's gone.
Yeah, it's what we were saying about Saison Victoria. This is a beer that does not quench your thirst. Like this is the sort of beer I drink when I want to drink. So to say, it's low ABV, so I can have a bunch of it, and it's not satiating. It's not filling. Mm-hmm. It's very, I don't know, between the tartness and the dryness, it just makes me want to drink a bunch of, while still having that, while still not being an Oktoberfest, while still being something that's very interesting and having lots of depth and complexity, if you will.
This is kind of a session wild beer.
Sure, yeah, totally. Yeah,
in alcohol percentage and the drinkability, because it is, you do want some more when you drink it, but it's not too crazy. It's not too wild.
Right.
There is a wild component in there. There is a challenging component in there that's like, ooh, that's a little
weird.
What is that? Yeah, it's a little weird. What is that? but it's still very drinkable.
Somewhat refined.
Yeah.
So
similar malt base?
Yeah. This one has a little bit of rye and a little bit of oats in it as well, just because it's going to be, we age it a little longer, so it, you know, I like to add in a little more unfermentables. When I say that, I say unmalted rye and unmalted oats, a little more food for the wild critters to chew on over time. And then it's hopped with Glacier instead of Saaz and Styrian Goldings. I find that that hop has a really cool citrus flavor that ages really well.
There's a Smarties component.
I haven't had Smarties in years, so I'll have trouble relating to you.
Smarties is my favorite Halloween candy. So, but
those are those chalky little things?
Yeah, but without being chalky, there's a Smarties kind of sweetness. It's not a sweet beer. It's a dry beer, but there's a Smarties kind of...
On the roof of my mouth. Yeah, when we talked to each other... maybe I'm off base here, but when we talked to each other last time, I brought to you the first beer that we fermented in the fooder, and you noticed I think what you referred to at the time as a somewhat of a heavier flavor in an otherwise really light beer. And at the time, I said, "Yeah, that's oak." I think that's what you're noticing now. Once again, you didn't say Smarties last time, but yeah, there's like a kind of like a like a textured, even chalky sort of like
Well, it's like a fruity component that, you know, the only thing I can
describe, I think the fruitiness comes from the culture, but there's like a the fruitiness combined with that oak flavor, I can totally see eliciting kind of a. I'm totally off base of what you're trying to describe.
No, I think you're, you know, I can't wrap my mind around what I'm tasting.
Right.
So yeah, I'm sure you're probably right. It's delicious. I think it's super fun. I mean, I'm so grateful for you coming up, you know, 2 years ago and sharing those beers with us, because otherwise I wouldn't have known, since, you know, we live 3 hours away or whatever, that you were doing such interesting, you know, kind of wild things with the barrel project that are only available here, you know, locally.
Right.
I just knew that you were making good, stable, solid, delicious, you know, standard, kind of more standard beers.
Totally.
But this, you know, it's like there's two sides of the brain here.
Absolutely.
At Lost 40.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a left and right dynamic going on. And they both have their value, and they both express their own thing. That's just to say I agree.
Well, Grant, this has been awesome. I'm so glad that, I'm grateful.
Before we do an outro, I guess to add on to that last comment, to circle back around to what we were saying, what I was saying at the very beginning, you know, this is a great example of how we try to do both. You know, we try to have consistency with variety. You know, we're trying to experiment and try new flavors and create new products and brands all the time. But, that being said, we also really try to hone down on specific brands that sell well, if nothing else, you know, because we want loyal customers, and we want people to expect Lost 40 to be reliable and something that they can depend on. And that's very important for us.
That's got to inform, one side has got to inform the other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. And there's definitely a resonance there that, you know, you know, this might pigeonhole kind of some brands, but, you know, our standard beers, as we have both referred to them as, fair, you know, they're good, they're quality beers, they taste very good, but, you know, they pay the bills, you know, they are what allow us to do other experimental stuff, and to do Fresh Cut Mondays and to make beers that are kind of outlandish. And in doing so, those beers give us kind of like the inspiration and the passion, the fun to come in and grind away and clean tanks and transfer beer and biofine and run the packaging line all day long to really get down and dirty. And so, you know, if it was just one or the other, I think this brewery would be worse off for it, because either we would just be slaving away at the same five or six beers all the time, or we'd be a very small production that couldn't build any volume because we would be so inconsistent and all over the place with our variety. So being able to do both, I think, is something that we take very seriously here. And whether or not that's a good idea, I think time will tell. But that's our MO. You know, we try to balance consistency with variability.
You seem to be doing pretty good.
Thanks.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you, James.
Well, thanks again to Grant. That was a fun time. And I brought a bottle of the Saison back with me to share with Steve. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he says about that, and also looking forward to the next visit down to Lost 40. And next week, we will be visiting Rebel Kettle Brewing, which is just about a block away from Lost 40. So look forward to that, too. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.